U.S. college students get Google Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat that's cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days, a 101-night sleep trial, and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices, up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep, upgrade your life. Ghostbed, the coolest beds in the world.
U.S. college students get Google Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat that's cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101 night sleep trial and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. Ghostbed. The coolest beds in the world.
Guys, I want to say thank you very much. We hit over 1 million views on Live and Alive. Thank you for supporting it. Thank you for watching it. If you haven't yet, go watch it. Share it with your friends. Comment, like, all that stuff. Live and Alive, streaming now on my YouTube. Thank you guys so much for your support.
The Honeydew with Ryan Sickler.
Welcome back to the Honeydew, y'all. We're over here doing it in the Nightpan Studios. I'm Ryan Sickler, RyanSickler.com, Ryan Sickler on all your social media. Starting this episode the way we start them all by saying thank you. Thank you for watching this show. Thank you for supporting this show. You guys have been here for years. I always say whether you're new here or whether you've been here, thank you for supporting anything I do. And if you got to have more, you have to check out the Patreon. It's called the Honeydew with y'all, and it is this show with y'all, and y'all have the craziest fucking stories on the internet. All right. I promise you, for $5, you're getting 200 and some episodes. Over 250 episodes are out. All right. And if you or someone you know has a story that has to be heard, then please submit it to honeydewpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to do your story. If you've sent it before, send it again. Bump it up to the top. We get a lot of submissions. All right. That's the biz. You guys know what we do here. We highlight lowlights. I always say that these are the stories behind the storytellers. I'm very excited to have this guest on here. First time on the Honeydew. Ladies and gentlemen, Phil Handler. Welcome to the Honeydew, Phil Handler.
Thanks, Ryan. I'm stoked to be here.
Thank you for being here. Before we dive into your story, please promote everything and anything you'd like.
Right. Okay. There. All right. Thank you. PhilHandley.com.
PhilHandley.com. Yep. What's your socials?
Phil Handley on everything. YouTube.
I post. There's no guy got you before you got
no,
it?
No. Oh, yeah. No. There was, and then I got it.
All right. Good. Yeah. Good. Yeah. And you have a book.
I do. Yeah. Spellbound.
Spellbound. Yeah. So what is Spellbound about?
It's,
well, wait, before I lead you into that, you had said before you recorded there was something you wanted to bring up.
Because this is the first time we've met in person, but years ago, this is how long ago it was.
Yes. I thought we met in person before. No. Okay. You remember it better than me, obviously.
So this is so long ago that there was a comedy club in Vancouver called The Comedy Mix. Did you ever play The Comedy Mix?
No.
Great club. It's not there anymore. Segura was there. Uh-huh. This is so long ago that Segura was there talking about trying to get into the improv. That's how long. This is that long ago. Yeah. And Segura was doing the weekend. And I was getting ready. I was doing guest spots on his weekend because I was getting ready to do my first TV set on Craig Ferguson.
Okay.
And Segura goes, my buddy Ryan just did Craig Ferguson. You should call him and just talk to him and see what his experience was like. So I just phoned you out of the blue and you gave me great advice and it helped my set. It's so nerve wracking to do your first TV set in the States, especially if you're
anywhere
from Canada, but it's so big. You're like, you know what I mean? I had to get a visa. I'm like flying in to do this. Anyways, we talked and you were so gracious and gave me great advice. And I remember being on, you know, the stage doing it and thinking of the shit that you just told me the kind of the lay of the land. So that's how long ago. It must have been 15 years ago.
I don't even remember that. And I'm glad that I did that.
It was really cool.
I'm a good
it
person, goddamn
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it was really nice. Yeah.
You said that out there, I was like, was I a dick? You're like, no.
And then so when you started doing the pod, I've wanted to do this one. Because certain podcasts you do and you're like, oh boy. But this one, I was like, oh fuck, I just can't wait to sit down and chat with you. Because that meant, I mean, it's such a huge deal to do your first
TV
set.
That's awesome. Thank you for remembering that.
Yeah.
And telling me that. Yeah. You made my day, dude. Yeah. I'm glad.
Yeah, because it was so cool. And it was so long ago.
This is what I do remember. And we're not going to get into This Week in Baseball for comedy, but they're very specific. At least back then they were like, you have to write out every word, the ands, the thes. And I remember they told me that I couldn't say Jesus, even though I wasn't talking about the person, I was using it as an exclamation. Either way, I wasn't allowed to say it.
Okay.
I couldn't talk about death or dying. And I was like, there's a lot of my sets going away here. Fuck. And then I remember when I did it, they did the intro, but he wasn't there that time. That we did back-to-back. A guy went first and I went second.
Okay. Yeah.
That's how they shot him. And it's funny because he promoted Cutman on, I didn't have anything at that time. And I was like, Tom, I'm giving him the Cutman DVD. They don't check shit. You know, they don't check shit. Yeah. And he's like, do it. And he said, my next guest you can see is Cutman. He put the DVD on the, I was like, that's hilarious. But then the writer's strike hits.
Oh, shit.
So they hold mine. I want to say I shot in September or November. And the strike lasted until like February. And they're like, we're probably not going to air yours. And I was like, fuck.
Oh, my God.
And then they said that they liked it enough that they shot the intro anyway. And they're going to. So it appeared months later. I was like, my first TV set ever is not even going to make it. And then it made it.
Yeah, because it's such a big deal. Because back then, this is before people were posting clips and online. Like, this was your shot to get more club work, more anything.
Anything.
These TV sets. And they had his desk, the old Craig Ferguson set, and then they kind of like wheeled that away, and that's where you did stand up. So the whole thing was like so discombobulating. But you would give me a heads up. He left.
Yeah,
before.
He's gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. I didn't meet him either. He was gone.
He walked by me and said, "Don't fuck up," and then was over.
Yeah. So your book. Tell us about your book and why you wrote this book.
Well, it's a memoir about my life, but primarily the fact that I'm dyslexic and that, that's kind of been the through line throughout my whole life. And my book starts quite dark because you're a kid, kindergarten, you know what I mean, did really well. And then first grade, you're just like, oh my God. All of a sudden it becomes like a Dickinson play in the first, grade because it's just black and white. You're just, there's like, yeah, you can't read. And they're not really interested in investigating it, They're just
so
like, you're lazy.
Before we get into dyslexia, I believe it was, I'm wrong a lot. We've had a lot of guests. I want to say maybe Joel McHale was dyslexic.
Is he?
I want to say it was him. I'll have to look. Was it? Yeah. So what is dyslexia for you?
I can't identify a symbol with a sound.
Give me an example of that. A symbol with a sound.
Well, so any word that I read.
What's a symbol?
Like a letter.
Okay.
So any word that I read is a word that I have memorized. So as I get older, my vocabulary gets better.
Oh.
But like, say your last name, I've never seen that. I've never
written
seen
out.
Sick. Yeah. Like a last name or a street name or a word I've never seen before. It might as well be like a Japanese symbol.
So if I just wrote the letters S-I-C-K-L-E-R out, my last name, and you're looking at it on paper for the first time.
I would know sick because I know the word sick. So I could probably ballpark it, but I would like cough the end part. I'd be like sick.
Really?
Yeah. Because I wouldn't.
Did you ever open and have to bring comedians up and remember their fucking names and credits?
Dude,
how?
Yes.
I'm not dyslexic and I fucked that up.
I did with that festival in Austin, and it was like
South by Southwest or Moon Tower.
You know what I did? I did a Caroline's when I first moved to New York. And again, performing at Caroline's was such a big deal. And they're like, Comedy Central wanted me to MC the diversity showcase. So it's the diversity showcase. So it's not Todd Smith. It's names and no disrespect. I couldn't read any, the names were from all over the world and it wasn't words that I memorized. It was the most hellish night because I wanted to show these people the respect they deserve. They got on this showcase and I'm just like, Oh my God. It was just sweating. Cause you, of course I'm not going to be able to say the names. Cause names are a problem, especially last names. But like, you know, the dudes from like Sri Lanka, like I didn't know, I had really trouble, you know, doing a name that wasn't just like an
John
Irish
Smith
name
or some shit.
Hurley, you know? So, yeah. That
so
was
when
hell.
Do you realize or who realizes, hey, Phil's got a problem?
Well, first grade, my first grade teacher just thought I was dumb. Like they investigated for about 7 seconds and they're just like, oh, this guy's an idiot. And they just treated me terribly and were like, he's slow and tried to fail me. My mom knew that I was smart and shouldn't be failed. So my mom, you know, just advocated for me every single year. But it breaks my heart because a lot of kids don't have that. You know, and a lot of kids, the parents are just like, well, just read, you know. But my mom, like if someone has a kid who's struggling reading, and I'm like, what are their social skills like? They're like, oh, they're amazing socially. They're really charming and they're funny and they have struggled reading. Then I can diagnose people with dyslexia like that because to be dyslexic, you have to be average intelligence or above average intelligence. You just struggle with, you know, reading, basically reading
so
and
you're
writing.
You're not just a mouth breather, drooling.
Well, yeah, like you have all these different skills and, you know, you dyslexics excel in all these different areas, but just the regular with the school system is not that.
And so I guess, too, it's got to be difficult because what I've learned about dyslexia is like some people have it with numbers.
Yeah. Dyscalculia.
Do you?
No, I was really good in math.
Different. That's the other thing. Yeah. It's not like he's got this thing and here's how you fix it. It's like, well, he's got this thing and now we got to figure out what kind of thing he has and then how to help with that.
But they weren't like, they would
but
test.
But teachers weren't doing that.
No. And they
your
would,
mom is.
My mom, yeah. My mom.
Is she taking you places to
yeah,
get tests
yeah, we'd go to
done,
tutors. Or? And I remember when I was a little kid, they put like all these needles in my head to like on like a polygraph thing to try to figure out what was going down with my brain, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, what? I'm like freaking.
How old are you at the time?
7.
That's terrifying.
It's terrifying. Dude, it was like that. It was all like, it was just.
That is horrific.
Dude, it was completely like that.
Second grade. Yeah. You're putting needles in your head
like
to figure
horror,
out.
Like in a horror movie. Yeah. And my sweet mom is just like, oh, no, dear. This is, you know, children get this done all the time. It was brutal all through school. But, but then socially, I was fine. I was well socially, but yeah, they put me in special ed. They did all these things and I understood the stigma of special ed. A lot of the kids didn't really fully grasp what people thought of us, but I got it, you know? It was tough.
And so when do you start realizing that you're figuring it out? What happens? What's the final shift?
I never really did. Like I just got through school, but like they would do things to me. They would like have me read a page of text and then try to answer questions and I'd get 0. And then they would read it to me and I'd get 100%. And I would be like, there, that we got it.
Yeah.
Don't make me read. And they'd be like, nah, we're still baffled, you know?
So when it's when it's time for the kids in class to read aloud, are you just shitting yourself?
God, Ryan, I would sit. I would try to do the math because I'd be like, say like they'd be the paragraphs and I would count to.
Oh, you go way ahead.
I get to my paragraph and sometimes you'd get there and it would just be this. And I'd be like, thank God, this is only going to be like probably 25 seconds of hell. But sometimes I would just land on the fucking.
Mm-hmm. And are you skimming it to try to learn it?
I'm trying to
look. Before it gets to you, I mean.
Yes, I'm trying to teach myself to read in the moment, even though there's been a precedent that I can't learn how to read. You know what I mean? They've been trying for years. It would just be hell. Hell. Yeah.
It makes me wonder now, thinking back to some of the kids in my class, it would be like, and then he, but then they'd go outside and play and be fine. So now I'm wondering if they were dyslexic.
Yeah, like but the thing that breaks my heart is there's like the statistics of people that are like incarcerated that are dyslexic is just off the charts because it makes sense because you're told you're dumb. You're forced to read. Like I have a joke about where I go, like the teacher would be like sound it out. And I'd be like, yeah, I can't do that. It's like it's like someone saying, hey, I have a peanut allergy. And they're like, oh, chew slowly. you're like, it just wasn't happening for me. And they were relentless. And, Yeah, it was a bad buzz.
What grade does it sort of finally get figured out?
My last year in high school.
High school?
Yeah, the last year.
Bro, I thought you were going to say fifth or sixth grade.
No, it was hell all the way through. I was great in math. They put me in all the like remedial math classes because I couldn't read. Because they started going like X represents. And I'm like, well, I can't fucking spell represent.
I didn't even think about letters in math too. Jesus I'm like, Christ.
Are you kidding me? So, my math was, the gym teacher was teaching me math. Like, that was how slow my math class was. I had some moron teaching me. My last year in high school, I just luck. They had a program where I'd do a class of school, and then I would go and had a one-on-one teacher, the special ed teacher, super cool dude, Mr. Armstrong. And he was kind of like glasses and a sweater, kind of like the Flanders from Flanders. But he was so cool. And so we would sit and he would help me with what I just learned. And I got great grades after that. So I was like, you motherfuckers tortured me all this time. And it was just because you know what I mean? Didn't try. You're telling me to try. Meanwhile, you're just like not trying yourself, you know? So yeah, it was the last year of school. And then I just left school and never looked back.
You were like, fuck college. You're not even trying that.
Or did you? No, I qualified to go to college and all my friends had gone to college, but my friends were older than me and I would go and party with them on weekends. So I felt like I kind of got the good part of college.
Yeah.
And then.
Did you take the SATs?
No, we didn't have those in Canada.
Oh, no.
No, but.
Would you have an equivalent? Do you have an ACT sort of SAT type test so schools can say this number and above will take these students?
I don't know if they do now, but at the time it was just like your grades and your final
GPA
year.
Coming out of high school.
Yeah. And then.
Which also could fucking suck because you could be shit in school, but test well.
Yeah.
Opposite.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So all my friends went to college and I had one friend who was a model and was like, well, you should model. So I left and went to Europe and lived in Europe.
As a model?
Yeah. You shouldn't look me in the eyes and be
probably sitting across from a male model right now.
Yeah, but it was it was a time.
What kind of modeling you doing?
What's that?
What kind of? You doing underwear or what are you doing?
No, it was like a time there was like a heroin chic thing many, many years ago. And I was skinny with long hair.
You don't
hair.
Have to justify. You're a good looking man, bro. I'm just curious that you went from dyslexia to modeling to comedy.
Well, yeah, because it was weird though, because it was like I was fine about my appearance until I started modeling and I realized I'm like, oh shit, I'm like really skinny. But there was like a heroin chic thing. They wanted guys with like long hair and skinny. So I did that for like 4 years and then started comedy.
What was that like?
It was cool. I grew up like a deadhead and I the whole time thinking to myself, like my heroes would not be wearing Dockers and getting their picture taken. Like I thought it was kind of uncool and silly and was surrounded by people that took it very seriously. So I was a little bit, I never had friends that were models per se, but I had lots of friends that were like outside of the thing. So in a way it was, I didn't really fit in modeling. So I didn't fit in school. And then I went to modeling and felt uncomfortable for different reasons. And then, you know, started comedy and felt quite comfortable.
So what are your coping mechanisms with this disability how do you learn to learn? Do you know what I'm asking? Like, what are the hacks you have to figure out going through life of let's say pulling into a drive-thru or a menu at a restaurant?
Yeah. Well,
these days, you know, all those words, but what was it like when you did? You know,
just today, for me to put in your address of the studio into like the Uber is a huge deal. Like I take the email from my publicist, I write it down on a piece of paper. Then I take that into the Uber thing. Then I screenshot the address to double check it twice. Like everything is a fucking pain in the ass. Yeah, it's hard, man. But so, and it's like, when I go to the airport, it's like my girlfriend cracks up that it's like a Navy SEAL operation. Cause I have everything by the door ready to go. Like I wake up, put on my watch, put on my shoes, and I'm like out the door. You know,
I'm same way with that.
I gotta plan everything out. I gotta plan everything out.
I got a whole list in my phone that I keep and I just cross it off when I throw it in the bag.
Yeah.
I know what I need at this point now. There's nothing I don't know I need on the road.
Yeah.
And I haven't packed the bag or checked the bag. When I do stand up, I just recently did one, checked the bag to go to Baltimore for, we took cameras and stuff, but I haven't checked a bag in years.
No, yeah, same.
Years.
Same.
I put it all, even in the winter, I'm sitting on that bitch. I'm
like,
we're going to make it.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I do the same thing. Yeah, so it's still like dyslexia affects organization, it affects like depth perception. Like when you were saying going through a drive through, I was like, I haven't driven in so long.
You don't drive.
I can, but it's pretty death defying at first, and then I kind of get
into the group. Why? What is it? The street signs?
Yeah. Or? Well, that you don't really help me is a GPS, because before
talks to you.
Yeah. Well, just you can see it on the road, but before GPS, you'd be driving and it's like you're reading signs. Like it's like
I hadn't even thought of
that sport where they're like skiing and then shooting and then like, yeah, you know what I mean? I'm like driving. I'm like driving and there's a spelling bee and I'm like crossing the lane. Like it was some of my maneuvers driving and I do drive. I just haven't driven in years, but I'm going to start driving.
Are you? Why?
Because I want to get a cool car someday.
All right.
Yeah.
When and I just can get out on the road.
Yeah. And I want to drive around. Like I live in New York. So like to go upstate or something like that. But yeah, I've never bought a car. I've never had a car. Never. Yeah.
Never. Okay.
Yeah. But the GPS, it is a game changer. It is an absolute game changer.
I hadn't thought about it like that for people with dyslexia.
Dude, it's crazy. It's nuts.
Do you have siblings?
Yeah, I have a sister, yeah.
And is she dyslexic?
No, she was like
a
complete
opposite. Thing?
It is genetic,
it
yeah.
Is.
It is, but no one in my family is.
That's funny to say. It's genetic.
Yeah, it's a little suspicious, actually. But my dad has some, he can read and stuff like that, but I think he has some dyslexic qualities, and then he's got like a crazy memory, like insane. Like I could be like, Dad, when did I first move to New York? And he'd be like, he'd know the exact date. He knows the dates of everything like that. And that's kind of a dyslexic. Some people, that's kind of a coping mechanism where you develop things, you know, like I have a good memory. When I'm on stage, I can remember people. I was like, how did you remember that dude's name? You know, if I'm like riffing with the crowd, I think that's a dyslexic thing where you just like, you try to make up for your, you know, shortcomings in different ways.
All right.
Yeah.
So then did you play sports? Were sports ever a problem?
No. Yeah, I wasn't. Yeah, that was the thing in school.
You say depth perception. So I'm wondering, can you basketball, baseball, hitting a ball?
No. I don't like people throwing shit at me. baseball.
Even if they're on your team.
I don't care for that. I don't trust anyone. That was another thing. That was why I was so destined, I feel like, to do comedy, was because anything that you could measure, like grades, scoreboard, anything that could be measured, I did not do well at. But I could, you know, recess would come and I felt so oppressed in school, and then recess would come and I'd be like bebopping and scat, like, you know what I mean? It would be like a set, basically. And and then the same with like hanging out. My friends, I'm from like a small town in Canada, and it was like the two people that were celebrated were smart asses and then people that were good at fighting. So I was a smart ass, and my friends were really supportive and really recognized, you know, if I was funny or whatever. Same with my family. Like it was more important for me to be funny at the dinner table than my grades. For sure. Like Friday nights, fucking bring it.
So what's your, just when you figure out you like comedy, I know we all have a process. What's yours? Do you write things down or do you keep it up here?
No,
how do
I
you
should,
go?
Because I know a lot of comics just keep it in their head. I have like this weird, and it's the most disorganized system, but I like write out ideas, then I type them into my computer, like misspell the shit out of them, and then we'll write them down again, and then bring like a list on stage to memorize shit.
Are you using ChatGPT now to your advantage?
Dude, I'm just using Google Maps, man. I've just got into Google Maps. I'm so many years from ChatGPT.
I mean, it's just right there and you talk to it.
Yeah. Maybe someone could show it to me.
Hey, ChatGPT, how do you spell this?
Oh, really?
Bing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'll show you.
I'm so...
So easy.
Really?
It's not... It sounds so much. It's literally like having a built-in Siri or Alexa.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but way smarter.
Oh, really? Okay.
I ask Alexa shit, and it's like, I don't have the answer for that. I'm like, ChatGPT does, bitch.
Yeah, I never... Yeah, I haven't even tried it. But I hear... I mean, it's quite popular.
Oh, that might change your life.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I just Google... I'll try to Google the spelling word, but then sometimes I can't decipher if it... You know, Google's not that helpful.
So how does a dyslexic man write a book?
Dude, very slowly. It took me 8 years.
Did it?
Yeah. I worked on the proposal for like 4, and I just locked down the proposal because the whole book was so daunting. So I got the proposal almost like a mission statement. Mm-hmm. And I referred to that throughout the writing process. But yeah, it took me a long time. I can write, and I like learned to write as I did it. Like I remember when I started, the first chapter took me 4.5 months. And my editor was like, you're going to be writing this. Like, you probably won't finish before you die. Like, you know, and then by the end of the book, I could do it in about 2.5 weeks. I could do a chapter. So I just kept going kind of. And it was so, for me, what happened was an agent, like a literary agent approached me. He was like, do you want to write a book? Which I thought, you know, it sounded like a fucking prank. And I was like, I read a book about dyslexia and it blew my mind because I thought I was the only one that had experienced that stuff.
Mm.
Because you're the only person in the class, you know what I mean? You might be the only person in the school that it was had my level of dyslexia. And you don't really talk about it, you know? So, yeah, it would freak me out. So when I read it, then I was like, okay, I got to write this because I want other people to see that it's, you know, normal and different things. You know, throughout my life, like, you know, like doing, like I started partying a lot when I was like young and I was like, oh, that kind of like, I felt a little dirty about it or whatever. And I talked to my therapist and like, you were going through hell every day. You needed
an outlet.
Yeah. A cocktail. Mm-hmm. You know, and what about the acid? They're like, well, you needed to,
you know,
a little of that too. But yeah.
Could you fucking read in another dimension? Are you dyslexic in another dimension? Yeah. Oh, are you dyslexic in your dreams?
I don't know. That's a great question. I certainly am not navigating a roadmap in my dreams.
You never have a thing where you're actually reading flawlessly and fluently in your dreams?
No, maybe I will tonight.
Hmm.
That's interesting, though.
Yeah, because I ask people who speak different languages if they dream in that language.
Well, apparently when you learn a language, that's when you really cross to the other side of knowing a language is when you start dreaming in the other language.
So when you... I mean, this is quite a daunting task for dyslexic person to write a book. I feel like that's like a blind dude trying to take a drive cross country.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, like, I just feel like that's like such an undertaking.
Yeah, it was wild. It's funny. I kind of miss it. Yeah, I just worked on it like... my friends, you know, comics in New York and stuff like that, we're just like, oh my God, you're still on the book? Because 8 years, dude. It took so long. Chapter 3. It was wild, but it really gave me such appreciation for, I mean, the book starts dark, but by the end, I realized it's like, if it wasn't for dyslexia, all the things that I cherish in my life are attached to the fact that I'm dyslexic, the fact that I, you know, live in New York City, the fact that I get to be here today and chat with you, the fact that, you know, I'm getting good tickets to the Dead this weekend, the fact that, you know, I do comedy, the fact that, like, everything that I cherish, you know, all my relationships, my friendships and everything. It's because if I wasn't dyslexic, I would have just kind of stayed, got a job and went to college, got a job and stayed in Canada. And because I'm dyslexic, I got to do all this shit, live in Europe, do all this stuff. So through the book, it really made me really grateful for what I thought for most of my life was a curse.
Is it something that you think will get better?
The more I read, or if I'm in a groove where I'm reading a lot, I do memorize more words. But no, it'll be me forever. You have it for, you know, forever. You kind of develop. I mean, I'm still developing coping devices.
Give me one.
Well, I'm gonna show you that. GPT. That maybe that'll be like a new coping device.
When life gets busy, meal prep usually falls off the list, and even when we do it, it's the same boring chicken and rice on repeat. That's why I reach for Tempo, balanced, fresh meals that are actually good for you. They taste great, and they're ready in minutes. There's no skipping meals. There's no sad takeout, no endless prep. Tempo delivers fresh, chef-crafted, dietitian-approved meals right to your door. Each meal is perfectly portioned for lunch or dinner and ready in just 2 minutes. With 20 new recipes every week made from nutrient-rich ingredients, Tempo keeps things exciting and helps you stay consistent with healthy habits. I have some red pepper chicken and a roasted cauliflower elote bowl on the way, and I can't wait to try it out. All their meals have been great. Tempo is convenient, but also flexible enough to fit the way you want to eat. For a limited time, Tempo is offering my listeners 60% off your first box. Go to TempoMeals.com/honeydew. That's TempoMeals.com/honeydew for 60% off your first box. TempoMeals.com/honeydew. Rules and restrictions may apply. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. The holidays are a time of tradition. Some people have many in their family and some have none, or they're just beginning their own. And now is the time to reflect on what they mean to you or to rewrite those traditions and make your own. Incorporating therapy into your new or existing traditions can help ensure you take time for yourself during what can be a very joyful but sometimes hectic and lonely time of the year. If you've ever considered giving therapy a try, why not try BetterHelp now and close out the year with clarity instead of chaos? With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is one of the world's largest online therapy platforms, having served over 5 million people globally. And it works with an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on over 1.7 million client reviews. This December, start a new tradition by taking care of you. Our listeners get 10% off at betterhelp.com/honeydew. That's betterhelp.com/honeydew. So here's my holiday pattern. Like, I really want to get you a nice gift and put a lot of thought into it. And then I don't know what to do, and I get you a gift card. All right. Well, this year I skipped that, and instead I got Aura Frames. Sometimes the hardest people to shop for are those who mean the most to you. You want something meaningful, sentimental, and that's exactly what Aura Frame gives you. It's simple. You just download the Aura app and you connect to Wi-Fi, and then you can upload unlimited photos and videos. And as long as your Aura Frame is connected to Wi-Fi, you can keep adding your favorite photos and videos from anywhere at any time. Every frame comes packaged in a premium gift box with no price tag, and you can even preload it with a personalized message before it arrives if you're gifting it to somebody else. You can't wrap togetherness, but you can frame it. For a limited time, save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $35 off Aura's best-selling Carver Matte Frames, named number one by Wirecutter, by using promo code HONEYDEW at checkout. That's AuraFrames.com, promo code HONEYDEW. This deal is exclusive to listeners, and frames sell out fast, so order yours now to get it in time for the holidays. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. Now, let's get back to the dip. What about your dad? Was he supportive of this?
I got so lucky. First off, if someone's child has dyslexia, I'm like, all you have to do is maintain their self-esteem, which is no easy task.
I was going to say, for a kid without dyslexia, it's hard to maintain self-esteem.
But you, with a kid, it's so important for a kid, because you go through school, you're 9, and it's like you have the grit of someone that's been through 2 divorces. Like, you've been through shit. You know what I mean? You have grit. So if you can maintain their self-esteem, when they get out of school, they will excel at whatever they do, because that's why I was so equipped. Because it's so, you know, when you start comedy, it's brutal, it's tough. But I had tenacity and determination because I, you know, learned to spell Wednesday when I was 17. So, you know, I always say just maintain the self-esteem. But my dad, I had the perfect combination of my mom would advocate, and my mom's really mellow and would go in and just get it done and get me from the second grade to the third grade. And then my dad would be like, those sons of bitches, you're smarter than them. They're, you know, my tax dollars, they got to treat you this way or whatever. So my dad was, you know, aggressively supportive, and my mom was really quiet and, you know, would help me.
Good cop, bad cop-ish.
Yeah, but they were both good cops to me. Right. But my dad was bad cop to, you know, society, who was, you know, mistreating me. And my mom was, you know, really just calm and would help me with my homework every night type thing.
Do you have kids?
No, but I'd like to.
Are you worried about passing on dyslexia?
Can I
ask a two-part question?
Sure.
Are you worried about passing it on?
Yeah.
And are you worried about passing on a different kind that you don't fucking have or know about and you can't help them the way you could help yourself?
Well, that's a great question. One, I think likely that my, because I'm so dyslexic that I think that, you know, I think there's like a 50% chance.
Is it that much?
Yeah. Yeah, I used to have this old joke where I go, there's a 50% chance that my kids will be dyslexic. And that's just so much for them to deal with, you know, being dyslexic and being raised by a single mom. That was an old joke. I don't do it anymore. Just an old one. But anyway, so yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, depending how spiritual you are, I could have a child with a different challenge. And I feel like I would be equipped to, I mean, I certainly would have the compassion to do it. So maybe that would be the case because they would.
What if they're number dyslexic? Then you have to learn that.
Dyscalculia. Yeah.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah. Dyscalculia. I could handle that for sure.
So is dyslexia. What other kinds are there actually?
There's you just words and numbers.
That's it. Words and numbers.
As far as I know. Yeah. But there's like everyone that's like dyslexic also has ADHD. Like there's a huge crossover and I didn't realize it. And I had to do a talk for kids with ADHD. And I was like, why are they got me because I'd done those talks for kids with dyslexia. So they, and I was like, I don't even know any about this. I watched a YouTube video within 30 seconds. I'm like, oh, I have ADHD. And I told my mom that. She goes, well, dear, your dyslexia was so bad. We never wanted to bring up the ADHD. And I'm like, okay.
So she knew?
Yeah. And then there's no science behind this, but there's a big cross section between ADHD and OCD. And I have OCD, and I think there's a cross-section, crossover between dyslexia and OCD, too.
What's your OCD? What do you do? What are your rituals?
I've got them pretty much under control. I talk a lot about it in the book. Like, it got pretty dark and grim at one point.
Tell us about it.
Well, it got real bad at one point because I didn't know so much of these problems. If you identify them, you get, like, once – because you think you're crazy with OCD. You're like – why is everyone else not spending the afternoon checking the burners on the stove? Like, why? How do people have like lives outside of the kitchen checking the taps? Did I fucking bump the burner switch on the oven when I was checking the tap? Like, you know, like checking locks, all that stuff. And I didn't know what it was.
How many times you checking locks at night?
Oh, dude. I mean, now I don't. Now I check it once.
Dude, I still check it at least 3 or 4 times at night. Oh. And I walk over and I say to myself, you've locked it. You don't need to come back and check this thing again. No one's coming in. No one's going out. And I will still go over and do it.
I kind of got it under control, but it was so bad at one point. At one point, I was living in the Chelsea Hotel. And I'm like, I am going to either flood or burn down this landmark. And I was going crazy checking stoves and stuff. But I didn't know what it was. And it just... the pendulum swings with like depression, the pendulum swings with OCD and it just hit me and it was really bad. But, you know, after I was diagnosed and I kind of worked on it and stuff like that, I kind of got it down. If it's like a stressful situation, my OCD will get like if I'm like rushing to the airport or something, I'll like be like, fuck, did I lock the door or whatever? But I've learned that. And the thing with OCD, it seems like the most important thing in the world that the door. But if you give it like a minute, you're like, it's fine.
Yeah.
You know, but in that moment, it seems so crucial.
Take us through some of the darker times in your book.
Well, I mean, the whole schooling process was really dark. And then I got out and I started. Then the pendulum swung with OCD and it got really dark again because I didn't know what was going on. And then they prescribed, what did they prescribe? Like they started prescribing like Paxil and Wellbutrin and all this stuff. And it was.
Isn't Wellbutrin the one that was a problem? Is that one? They were all suicidal. They're probably all.
They were all a problem for me. And it just didn't sit right. And then you're on it and they make you stay on it for 6 weeks. And again, those medications work really well for some people. It just didn't agree with me.
Yep.
And so then I was like depressed, OCD. And then they're throwing this stuff in it that just made me more depressed and more. So I had to move back home.
And none of it's helping you read better or solve the problem.
Not helping anything. It's just adding like worse thoughts, you know?
And you're how old at this point you moved back home?
I would have been in my 20s, like say like late 20s. And I lived in England to be a model. And I felt I had a girlfriend and she had a little girl and I adored the little girl. And I felt like I'd kind of become a man. And then then OCD hit and then I had to move back home. And I'm like living with, you know, my parents are retired.
That's why you moved back, because of the OCD?
Yeah, it got really so bad. I had moved to the States. Mm-hmm. And then my OCD hit me really bad. And I had such a great setup in the States. My friend lived in the Chelsea Hotel in New York and I was there and I was taking improv classes and everything was great. And then just bam, I got hit with OCD and I didn't know what the hell it was. I really thought I was going crazy. And then I moved back home and they started giving me all these like prescription drugs and all that stuff. And it just didn't agree with me. And then the final, what happened was I was going to a therapist. And he was supposed to be this top guy and he would sit, he looked so disinterested. And I was like, this motherfucker, you know,
yes.
He was supposed to be the top guy. And we're in his office and I'm up and off and on and starting medication and taking off it. And it's just, everything's making me feel worse. And I'm sitting with my mom and he goes, we've done all these tests of that. We think you're bipolar. And it just hit me. These fucking guys know about as much about mental health as the teachers knew about teaching me reading. Like it was just this eureka moment. And even my mom. So I'm like, my mom's grabbing my leg because I was like, she could tell I was like about to go off on this dude. And then I remember we left the session and my mom's like, I was like, and I don't swear in front of my mom, but I was like, fucking bipolar. And my mom's like, that doesn't seem right to me, dear. And at that point, it was right when I was starting stand up and I was like, fuck it. I'm getting off all the medication because these people I certainly don't have high highs and I really don't have low lows. Like I'm a pretty even keel dude. I'm not bipolar. I just don't have that. And I got off everything and it was right when I was starting comedy and I was coming off this medication and you feel really like I've done narcotics. The hallucinogenics, stuff like that. You really want to trip. Come off fucking Wellbutrin and all those.
That like? You're going off all of that shit.
Yeah. So I would be walking to open mics in Vancouver and being like, I can feel my feet on the ground and but I can't feel my leg. Like it's just weird. But stand up totally saved me because I was just dedicated to doing 5 shows a week in Vancouver. And that was a hard task. That meant doing music open mics. That meant doing, you know, anywhere where there was like a microphone and stuff like that. And it totally saved me. But it was really dark to be depressed and to be misdiagnosed or given those prescription drugs.
Understood, miss everything.
Yeah, but those drugs, and again, they totally work for people. I'm not like denouncing.
Yeah,
Paxil,
no, I know you mean for your
but
dyslexia.
For me,
yes.
But just for my brain, it just didn't agree. So I mean, now I just, and I also found meditation at that time. And that helped me too.
Now, so there's no learn a new language for you.
No.
But you still would go to Europe and things like that. Did you ever branch out when you were over in England and go to Spain, anything like that?
Yeah,
does that give you anxiety to be in a country where you're like, I can't even figure out what the fuck
Oh, dude. Yeah. Like so when I modeled, I would be in Milan, Paris, mm-hmm. and I was based in London. And you're generally based in Milan or Paris. But if I look at a street sign in Italy, I can't tell which is the street and which is, the piazza or they start getting real creative with the word street. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I couldn't even tell what was going down. So much to my dismay, I kind of had to find a reader model and just hang out with them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The people would help me get to cause for when you model, you'd go to like maybe 10 appointments or 12 appointments in a day.
Damn.
Yeah. You'd go to get shows. You'd go to a designer. You go to Jean-Paul Gaultier. You show him your book. If you're lucky, he'll tell you to like take off your shirt or like try on a blazer, walk, and then passes your book back and says, what do they say? Grassy. And then you go to the next thing. But yeah, you're running around town. Yeah, it was tough. That's for me to get around town. Yeah.
With dyslexia.
Yeah.
In another country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I would love to, learn a language.
I mean, how long do you think it would take you to learn? Well, I don't know.
The book took 8 years. So, yeah.
What about listening, though? How are you with just listening when you do these, like Babbel or something like that?
Yeah, I've never done it, but do you speak another language?
Mm-mm.
Oh, okay.
No, I just said that in Spanish. I know words in Spanish. Like, I could listen and I could real ear hustle and be like, I think he said something about a dog and outside. You know what I mean? Like, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. So maybe I could get to that point. Yeah.
So tell me more about some lowlights here with dyslexia.
I mean, school was the real lowlight. But now it's so funny how you can as you distance yourself from, you know, traumatic things, how they become, you can really appreciate them. Like, again, I'm so grateful that I was dyslexic, as much as a nightmare as it was at the time. Now I'm like grateful for kind of all that stuff. OCD is a really kind of a weird one to be grateful for, because it does just causes so much anxiety. Do you have OCD?
I used to have it. I definitely have it. I used to have it to a point where, especially when all this trauma was going on in my life, and I look back on it now, but I would count steps when I walked. I would run up and down my grandmother's steps and I would count. I'd do it by twos. I tried to do it by threes. She had a remote control and all the numbers were 3, 6, 9. They were laid out. I just would rub my finger over it all day long and just count by threes till I got tired of it. I got so good at counting by fucking threes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then I would do. And then another thing I used to do, too. So you would say, we'd just be talking. You'd say, I don't know, anywhere. You say dyslexic. I would then take whatever word it was that stood out in that sentence for me, and I would say it would be dyslexic. And quietly, I would count the syllables on my finger. I go dyslexic, 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 dyslexic,
and if you didn't,
until it landed on my thumb.
No way, really?
Mm-hmm.
And what did you have something in your head? If you didn't do that, what would happen?
No, I was going to ask you, did you have anything like where mom will die if I don't? I never had any impending doom. It was just something I felt like I needed a task to complete. And even if I didn't, it didn't bother my day. Like, I'd come down the stairs, like, oh, I didn't count them going up that time. It wasn't to a point where it would ruin my day, or I'd have to run back up them because I didn't. Yeah. It wasn't that. But it was constant repeated patterns of different little things. And I don't know where it came from, why, but it's gone now. I don't do it anymore.
Yeah. Well, that's something that, and if people who are listening that have OCD, from my experience, it burns out.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Like, I've seen basketball players that'll be on the court and after practice, they have to shoot 10, not just make them, 10 swish in a row.
Okay.
It's got a swish. And then they say, well, it actually ended up making me a better player. And I can get that.
Yeah.
But I never had it like that, where it had to be that specific. Like,
well, sometimes it's, I can't believe I forgot that word. What's the word where, like, you can't have a black cat walk in front of you, or you can't walk under a superstition. I think some people have superstitions, and then some people have OCD, and maybe there can be some overlap, but, I didn't really have pending. I guess the pending doom was the amount of anxiety I felt if I didn't go back and check to see if I locked the door and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I did cognitive behavioral therapy, and that really helped. And I meditate a lot, and that really helped.
How's that help?
I think it calms you. You learn that you have some control over your mind. But that was a dark time at the peak of my OCD.
How are you blocking that out to meditate?
Well, before I even knew that I was before I knew it was OCD, I just knew that all of a sudden I was feeling kind of crazy.
Mm-hmm.
My girlfriend at the time, who's such a cool woman, she had been, I was doing TM. I had done TM for years. And then I had this episode where, like, OCD just hit my life. And she had gone to this Vipassana meditation retreat.
What is that?
Well, it's a
how do you say it?
Vipassana.
Never heard. TM is the trans.
Mean if you said how to spell it, but yeah, but TM is transcendental meditation,
which I've heard Seinfeld talk quite a bit about.
Yeah, and it's great. And you do it 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes at night, and you have a mantra. So you're saying something. So it's maybe a little well, I don't want to tell people how it is, but yeah. So so you just repeat a mantra for 20 minutes. Vipassana is a sensation-based meditation. And to learn it, you need to go. And this is the peak of my OCD. I didn't know what it was. I just thought suddenly I'm a lunatic. You go, Vipassana meditation is a 10-day silent retreat. And you sit for, I forget that you start at like 5 a.m. till 9 and you have a little break. And you're basically meditating all day. It's like 12 hours a day or something like that, silently. And you're just focusing on your breath. And I was already, my mind was just going, it was bad timing. But I was so desperate. I thought it would cure my OCD. And it didn't. I do Vipassana now. But at the time, it was just to be biased, to be in a room full of people, not being able to talk, having these thoughts that are just out of control. And then in the meditation situation, there was nothing to distract me. It was just there. Thoughts. That was intense. That was a pretty dark time.
And none of this ever drove you to alcohol or drugs or anything like that?
No. Like, I mean, I've actually recently stopped drinking, but I partied in high school. And then by the time I finished high school, I certainly partook in things certain evenings, but no, I never, you know, I certainly in high school got, you know, blackout drunk or whatever. But then after that, you know, I'd have a couple of drinks, but no, I never got relief. And what it did do, if I was hungover, everything was a million times worse. Oh. OCD was worse. I felt depressed. I was like tripped out. And
speaking of tripped out, you never, no clarity ever came to you on an acid trip?
I never had a bad trip. And I think clarity did. It never solved any. I didn't have, I mean, when I took hallucinogenics, I was in high school and stuff, and it wasn't, I didn't have these problems then. I was just depressed probably because school was so grueling, but I didn't have, everything was really minor then. And then now I feel like I've kind of done all that stuff, you know?
So that's what I want to ask you. What age are you like, all right, I know what I have. I know what this is. I've got a grasp on it. I can move forward now armed with this knowledge and function as a normal person, at least what you feel in society.
I don't know if I ever, I mean, it definitely, when I finished the book, I felt some closure, but it's still something that I manage. Like if I got like really party tonight or I'm going to see the dead this weekend.
How's that going to be this weekend?
Oh, it'd be great. It'd be great. But if I like really partied hard, then Monday I would be a wreck. But if I meditate, sleep, eat properly, and I can cope with anything. I feel like I cope with things so much better, you know, but I feel I'm just learning how to deal with all that stuff, you know?
Are you on any medication now for
no.
it? No.
Yeah.
How long have you been med free then?
Well, there was only like many, many years. There was just like a stage. There was probably like a year and a half where they kept giving me different combination. And once I came off that, I never took medication again. But I'm like, I don't have any resentment for dyslexia. I feel like OCD's kind of passed. There might be like a few little things, but I recognize, I'm like, oh, you have anxiety about this. And that's why you check the stove twice, you know, but it's nothing like it was. But so it's so important to identify the thing. And then again, if people have OCD, it seems in the moment, it's like, I'm never going to get over this. But it does pass, and you can, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, does help, or, you know, people do exposure therapy. I never did that, but that's supposed to really help. Like if you're scared of heights, someone will take you and you like slowly, you know, get close to the edge or whatever.
That happened to me. My daughter almost got hit by a car and I became unhinged and I got terrified of heights and flying. That incident.
Whoa.
And I always say it was like this anxiety had been laying in a hammock inside me for decades. And then this happened. It was like, we're up. Let's go. And man, terror. I mean, any little bump on a plane. How long ago was this? It's about 2020, 2021, somewhere in there. And I had to fortune of Dr. Drew being at YMH, and I was telling him about it, and he told me about EMDR therapy, which I've preached about on this show. I still have people hit me up nonstop about it, and that worked for me. I live on the top floor of my building now, and I sleep on my flights. And I mean, no meds. I've never taken meds on a flight or anything. I just was like, nah, we're going to beat this. But that therapy did it.
Oh,
made
that's
me understand
great.
Where that fear, that false fear came from and control, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow.
But it fuck that exposure therapy. No, hell no. That would not have worked for me. I'd have been like, no, we ain't even going near the edge. We don't need to go near the
edge.
But
it's so amazing. So the first thing you tried worked?
Mm-hmm. That therapy worked.
See, because that's like sometimes.
It's different than talk therapy. And that's what he said. Talk therapy is great, but you're just talking.
Yeah.
And you're figuring things out and you're working things through and you're understanding more. And then you can go out in the world with that knowledge. And that's great. This was very different. This was buzzers in alternate hands. And it's, God, I always forget. It's like, I forget. I can't remember what it stands for, but it's something. I can't remember. People are going to get mad at me, but it's EMDR.
Oh, that's great. But you're so lucky that the first one worked, because mm-hmm. so often you have to try like
and
a
I'm
few
lucky
different
that
things.
It worked. It took me about 3-4 months, I think, I went to therapy, and I was done.
Oh, that's great.
And that's
great.
What they told you. There's an end to this.
Oh, that's great.
It could take you years. It could take you months. Some people were even quicker than that.
Yeah.
Just you didn't know what had happened. Now you got it. And it took me a few months, and then I started good to go, bro.
Wow.
6 a.m. flight. Pop that eye mask on. I tell the lady, don't even worry about me.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'm the same, man. It's funny. I had an incident. My mom was in the hospital, had a surgery, was getting out of the surgery. And I heard the doctor say to her, oh, you're all fine. You're okay to go. And I fainted in the hospital. My sister and my dad caught me before I like hit my head or whatever. And then my mom had a major surgery, was home, and they kept me. I was still
I was fainting.
Yeah, I was there. I was there.
Just put him in his mother's bed.
Yeah. But since that incident, I was never squeamish. Now I'm a little squeamish. Like if someone was like if you like that, like really cut your finger or something like that, it would like affect me. I never had that till that incident. So it's kind of similar to that.
It's interesting you say that. So I can't remember what it's called. It's like vagal or something like that. We've had guests on the Patreon, and my stepson has it, and his mom has it. And my daughter, just the other day, so they get squeamish around blood or any medical procedures
okay.
or whatever. And
yeah.
My daughter's mother, like you give her a needle, she's got to sit in a chair. She's the one that'll slide out, whatever. And
okay.
I remember when she was pregnant with my daughter, they had to do blood work and stuff. And she was so weak, they wheeled her out in a wheelchair. And I'm taking pictures laughing at her because it was just a couple needles. And I'm like, you look like you just went through hell. Like,
yeah.
You look like you're ridiculous. And then her son starts passing out, but not until like his 20s.
Okay.
He passes out. My daughter the other day, I have to take her for an ultrasound. She's fine through the ultrasound. We get outside and she's like, I don't feel good. I feel like I'm going to throw up. I'm like, what's going on? She's like, I don't know. And her mom's there. And I said, will you just take her to the ladies' restroom? She's like, yep. So they go in. I'm waiting outside. And they're in there a while. And I'm like, is everything okay in there? I think she's throwing up and whatever. And she's like, no, she had it. She got sweaty and flush and felt like she was going to pass out just from thinking about it. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Whoa.
So it's got to be hereditary.
Yeah.
That's got to come. Those three have it. I'm not like that at all. I sit and watch it, whatever.
I'm fine with stuff to me. But since that moment, if like someone like my nephew, I'm really close with my nephew, and he's an amazing skateboarder. And I don't like seeing him bail or something like that. It's like a little like, or hearing about him injuring himself or something like that. It like freaks me out since that incident.
Yeah.
But I'm like fine with myself or whatever. But it's similar to that where something can just like bring up some weird thing.
Let me ask you this. Is dyslexia, have you been able to use it to your advantage in any way? Is there any time it's helped you?
Yeah. I mean, I think, it helps me all the time. Like it helps me. I mean, it's who I am. You know what I mean? And I think it helps me with comedy. It certainly helps me with understanding people that are going through shit. I've gotten a lot of material from it, which is, you know, what we need. So yeah, I think it helps me in a lot of ways. And I think because I struggle with words and stuff like that, I think, and this is just natural for any dyslexics, we struggle with writing and reading, but then we excel in other areas that, you know, like a lot of dyslexics are great artists, great, people do stuff with their hands. And for me, I think, yeah, it's helped me with comedy and it helps me with just the way my brain works is, yeah, I'm like grateful that I have it now.
You ever think about who you would be if you didn't?
Yeah. Like
how much different of a person you'd be?
It would be wild because I would have stayed. Again, I'm from a small town in Canada called Oshawa. Maybe I would have moved to Toronto. Some of my friends moved to Toronto, but I mean, it's just dyslexia has just given me a life that I'm so grateful to live, you know, doing comedy and just doing fun stuff.
And right now you're not on meds for it or anything?
No. I mean, I don't know if there are meds for dyslexia, but no, I don't
or
take
your OCD.
No, I take vitamins.
That's great.
It. Yeah. But again, medication's good for people. It just didn't work for me. God, it made everything so much worse. But I just think that's the case.
No doubt. You know, you can even look at things, excuse me, like alcohol. Some people just turn into monsters when they have it. Like some shit just doesn't work for your system.
That's such a great example.
Period.
Example.
Like I also have friends who drink beer all day. Fine. The minute it's liquor or whiskey or whatever, asshole. Aggressive. Violent. Like we're like, God damn it. Joe's going to fight tonight now.
Yeah.
With us. Not with anybody else. With us. He's going to come after us.
I have friends like that. Yeah. They'll fight. Yeah. Our friends will just find the biggest, like we were growing up, we just find the biggest person in the bar and that would be, and you're just like, oh, this could be such a nightmare.
Bro, you're going home fucked up.
Yeah.
I want to wrap this up with not only, I've never asked this before. I want to know advice you'd give to 16-year-old Phil Hanley. But before we do,
yeah,
advice you'd give to a parent or anyone who's dealing with dyslexia, because as you said, there's so many, there are different kinds.
Yeah.
And you know, just figuring it out first and then what it is is a thing. What would you say to someone?
My big advice to people, and I'm glad you asked me that because this is something that I love to say, because I feel like I just say like, just maintain your kid's self-esteem. And I know I've mentioned that like 9 times in this podcast, but it's so important. They'll have trouble. You'll have trouble convincing your kid of this, but they will excel at something soon as they're out of school. The school is just not designed for us. Simply not designed for us. The same way that a Snickers.
That sucks. The first 18 years of your life is being just like feeling like you're a loser or dumb or
It's not only feeling that you're. Told
that.
Yeah. Like a failing report card is not subtle. There's no like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's maintaining a kid's self-esteem and knowing, I mean, what dyslexia gives you, if you've made a list of the qualities you want your kids to have, resilience, tenacity, like it does, if you maintain their self-esteem, dyslexia gives you all those things. That's the most important thing. And then people with OCD, I just say like, it does pass and there's ways like that therapy. You had that problem. Some people would have just accepted. This is a huge problem. I'm not going to be able to go here. I'm not going to be able to go there.
And I'm just going to live like fly, scared to death to fly.
Or I'm going to drink 6 beers before I got on a flight. No offense to Bert, but
But I also know people that take Klonopin and shit and just knock themselves out.
Yeah.
I don't even take Advil.
No. I'll take an Advil for sure. But I just think that you were proactive. And so often people are like, well, I did this therapy and it didn't work. It's like the next one will work or the one after. Just I think being proactive really helps. And I know when you're suffering from mental illness, it's like hard to get motivated to do that stuff, but there are ways, and you just, if you can prove it a little bit, then you know things are more manageable.
That's great. Now advice you'd give to 16-year-old Phil Hanley.
I would say, and this is just something that I'm learning now, is I would say to me at 16, just like hold tight and all this shit, it will pay off, all the life experience that you think at the time where you're like, there's no upside to this. There is. Miraculously, there is. And I would just say, hold tight and take it all in. Because I mean, my whole act and my book, like my whole life is all those experiences. And everything, so much of my humor comes from growing up in a town where I thought, oh, this place is shit. And there's, you know, it's all this stuff. But it's like, no, it's a great place. It was filled with great people. Some of my favorite people to this day I've ever met. Yeah, really just being positive and having faith that, you know, you do get, you get mighty from those experiences. Talk to someone who hasn't gone through shit. First off, it's a boring ass conversation. Yep. Secondly, they're thrown because of the smallest thing in the world. But if you've been through stuff, like that pays off. It's you really have to be grateful for that stuff.
I love it. Thank you, man. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for coming on and sharing all this.
Dude, thank you so much for having me. This is a podcast. I don't love doing podcasts, to be honest. And this is one that was on the list. I was like, I can't wait to sit down with Ryan. Because your introduction to me was so, you were so cool and so That's gracious awesome, all those thank years you. Ago.
Thank you for doing it, dude.
Thanks, brother.
And how did you do on the set, by the way? Did you crush?
Yeah, I did well. I did well. It was a good set. Bro.
Yours aired? Yours aired right away? Didn't hold it for months like the hell am
I? Yeah, that's a bad sign when they do that. it aired and then, it was good. It was great.
Thank you, brother. Phil Hanley on all social media?
Yep, Phil Hanley on Instagram and YouTube and everything, yeah.
All right, brother. Thank you. As always, Ryan Sickler on all your social media. We'll talk to you all next week.
U.S. college students get Google Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify has got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat's cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101 night sleep trial and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, GhostBed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. GhostBed. The coolest beds in the world.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.